Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 Minute Drill on the program.
Going around the country, talking to the people covering the stories where they're happening. It's called the 2 Minute Drill. It's brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. Never settle. Take advantage of the happy hour going on at Twin Peaks. Best happy hour in town, whether it's the 29-degree draft beer or their made-from-scratch cocktails. You will absolutely love it. Go check it out right now. And don't forget, your home for all the playoff baseball and the NBA season opener. Tomorrow night, the NBA is back. Get to Twin Peaks for the official tip-off of the season, as you can check out the Nets and Bucks getting things going in the early game. Lakers-Warriors in the late game. Twin Peaks, best place for all things hoops, all things football. Remember, they got the Sunday ticket, NFL Sunday ticket, and the ESPN Plus for all the college action as well. No better setup. All the TVs, made-from-scratch menu. Great, great 29-degree draft beer. And, of course, those made-from-scratch cocktails. Twin Peaks is the spot for all your sporting events. Never settle. Twin Peaks. Let's get things started in New Orleans, Louisiana. Gus Kattengill, ESPN 100.3 is there. Gus, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Come on. Ed Orgeron, I mean, out already and giving him the whole $17 million. Like, how bad is it if you're willing to make yourself look like that kind of circus?
Well, the fact that I just heard you talking about where you are over there at Twin Peaks, and the first thing that popped in my head is Coach O would love to meet you there as well. I'm just being serious. Look, man, the fact that on this radio show 2 Wednesdays ago, a caller literally called in and, you know, and pranked him and said, hey, I want you to wish my I think it was my daughter a happy birthday. She's in the crowd. And then he's like, well, I can't find her. What she look like? And he goes, yeah, but I don't want you to date her. That just kind of gives you an idea, man. Dude, I'm serious. I mean, look, I mean, I wish I could tell you that it wasn't, you know, you can't be the highest state paid employee, second highest paid football coach in college, and have a story written about you where you're pulling up to a gas station, you make a comment to a lady who's in exercise attire, who happens to be pregnant, and says, I'm married and pregnant, and he responds with, you know, what does that matter? And then it turns out to be an LSU official's wife. I mean, it can't happen. I mean, you know, when that is going on, and then you add some of the football stuff that goes with it, it just gives you an idea, man, of the absolute circus that Baton Rouge has become. There's no other way to describe it.
That story is the one that's most commonly named. I read the Athletic story that features that. Was that the final straw? Was that the last piece of the puzzle, or is that just one of many things?
You know the phrase, "What they'll make a mountain out of a molehill," and all that, but when you have a bunch of them, it just keeps going, and it's on and on. And look, you know, there's the chair tossing, you know, in the locker room before the Kentucky game because he didn't like the hype video, and he went off on his staffers. But the thing is, the things that got him unliked and then fired at Ole Miss reared its ugly head again. Temperament, berating staffers, coming unhinged. You know, I mean, look, the personal life and all of that other stuff, when you're winning, it's cute, right? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, when you're winning, there he is, Coach O. When you're losing, it's like, what are you doing? And it's just, it's tone deaf to something that I think Soren really brings in to question the future of LSU and who takes this job. They are embroiled in some deep doo-doo when it comes to Title IX lawsuits and sexual misconduct, sexual assault cases. Like, LSU is in some stuff. And is the NCAA going to act on it? Could, you know, future millions of dollars be up to paid out in losing court cases and stuff? It's not a pretty situation. So when you of that going on, and you're having testimony of some of these women in tears and court cases, and the same afternoon the coach is posting photos of him with a lady. It's beyond tone deaf. It's stupid. So, but you said it though when you welcomed me in. They had enough to fire him for cause. The fact they're paying him the full $17 million is because he knows stuff. That's the only thing you can logically deduce. Because you didn't have to pay the $17 million. I mean, you could have had a PowerPoint presentation of all the many reasons off the field and on the field. Poorly coached football team, not being able to get the plays involved. I mean, just on and on. And you settled to pay him $17 million? I mean, look, he tongue-in-cheek said, well, now I have enough money to buy me a hamburger. That was said for a reason. The people that know him know he absolutely took a shot out of it, said, all right, you want my silence, you're buying it. And that's what they did.
Yeah, that's what they did. And where do they go next?
It's a great question. Everyone's bringing up, look, Scott Woodward's just a splash guy and all this hire. The thing is, I was speaking with someone earlier today, and James Franklin is the name that's on the top of a lot of people's list. It's five coaches, essentially. Franklin, but that initial chit-chat with his reps didn't go well. And look, I can probably understand it. You know, USC is probably going to come calling. They're in the middle of a season. The timing of all of this is very strange. Lane Kiffin apparently is already stumping for it. He has no buyout. He'd take it tomorrow if it was offered for him. But his off-the-field lifestyle has been brought up. Mel Tucker over there at Michigan State is another name. And then the other two that really kind of seem to be coming out. One I don't understand is Bill O'Brien, the offensive coordinator in the rehab program in Alabama right now. But those seem to be the top names. I personally like Billy Napier of UL, the Raging Cajuns. I know it's in the Sun Belt. Some of your listeners probably like, who? South Carolina, Auburn, Vandy, a couple of other schools, tried to interview him and reach out to him. And he's just waiting for, I think, the right job. Very good. I think something like that might be this way, but, you know, everything that I've been told is there's a war chest of money waiting to be thrown at a coach seven or above to try to pry them from somewhere. So, and then don't forget Jimbo Fisher's tie-in with Woodward. He doesn't have a buyout as well. So those are the names you're going to read about. Those are the names you're going to hear about. Let's see who accepts it or not.
Yeah, so help me out about where the money comes from. I mean, this is a university that was talking about filing bankruptcy. Is doling out $17 million to make a guy go away, has got an investigation that Les Miles ultimately brought Les Miles down at Kansas, and maybe, you know, for, as collateral damage, Jeff Long as well at Kansas. And that would seem that it's going to end up in lawsuits and payouts. Where is all the money coming from to pay all these people?
Funny how that works, son. Don't forget, you owed $11 million because they geniusly guaranteed Bo Pelini's contract. So $7 million there. They owe $4 million for, I believe, Canada and other coordinators or two. There's $11 million still owed to coordinate them to assistants that he fired. So $17 million plus another $11 million. Then if you want to buy out all these other guys, Luke Fickle is another name I kept forgetting that everybody wants. But, I mean, he has a buyout, too, and everyone seems to think he wants to stay in the Midwest. So I that's the thing. You're just doling out this money. TAF, Tiger Athletic Fund, friends of the program, and I'm using my fingers doing air quotes, right? That's where all this money comes from. The school isn't cutting the check. TAF is giving the school the check and the donation. You know how it works. It's the people that have the $250,000 to $300,000 RV mobile homes that, you know, believe they are the shot callers. And as long as, you know, the university or the athletic director knows these people, that's where it comes from. I'm like you, though. I need, you know what we need? We need our government to be run like these college football program boosters run, how they hire and fire coaches, because they can absolutely just like this. with a snap of a finger, come up with 20 mil or 17 mil on the buyout, I have potholes in my street, you know?
Yeah. The rich guys are a lot more willing to pay the tax to the schools for their football teams than they are to the government, I think, is the moral of the story there, right? They're happy to help their alma mater win because they give them tens of millions of dollars every year. You know, every athletic budget in all these power schools is 100 million-ish or 100-plus, and they all show like $40, $50 million in donations. So someone's happy to give the money away. All right, real quick on the Saints, 3-2. Jameis Winston can throw some touchdowns, doesn't throw for a lot of yards. They really rely a little bit more ground and pound. As they come off the bye week, is this team where you thought it would be, and how optimistic are you that it's a playoff team at the end of the year?
Where I thought they would be, I don't know if I could say that. But I thought they'd be 2-3 going in. Just said it's so many question marks, so many players are asking to do things that you've never done before, like having your all-pro kick returner be your number two receiver. And such, and they're losing a lot of different players with their injuries. So no, I didn't. But they should be 4-1. And I think the moral of the story, way I can best summarize where they are right now out of the bye, is it's all by design right now. Sean Payton has literally gone into a bunker mentality of what do you have to do to win this game, this quarter, this play? Like literally, Jameis TD to pick ratio is 12-3. I'd have taken that. I don't care how it is. But when you look at some of the teams now starting to separate themselves and make noise in the NFC, your Dak Prescott to Kyler Murray's, Tom Brady, for crying out loud, Aaron Rodgers, you got to have playmakers. You got to have quarterbacks that are doing that. So I know it's been a huge topic here the last 2 weeks about opening up the offense and just letting it fly and letting it go. You wanted to wait for Michael Thomas, and the Ian Rappaport reports today is still several weeks away. I'm hearing it could be November 25th. So that's disheartening. But until you get those weapons, I never thought I'd say this. The defense is going to have to win the games until they start getting some weapons on offense. Until then, that could be the identity of the Saints.
Yeah, and the good news is, though, they do have some tremendous defensive personnel. We'll see how far it goes. Gus Kattengill in New Orleans, always great stuff, buddy. Appreciate the time. Have yourself a great week.
For sure, man. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
With Brian D, 620 WTMJ in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Brian, how are you, sir?
I am well. Thanks, as always, for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate the time. Let's start on the college side. Graham Mertz, one of our local kids, still not putting together, has yet to throw for, 250 yards? Only one game he's topped 200 yards passing. What's the feeling on Graham Mertz and whether or not he's the guy long-term there with Wisconsin?
They just don't have a whole lot of other options right now. And I know that sounds crazy for a school with the cachet of Wisconsin that should be able to recruit great quarterbacks. But in terms of talent, he's as good as they've got in this moment in time. So they're kind of stuck in terms of rolling with Graham Mertz. And I say the word stuck because of everything you just outlined. He hasn't been great. The team hasn't been great all year. But the opportunity still lies ahead here, kind of out of nowhere. Wisconsin beats Army this past weekend, which if you can't be a triple option team at home, you got bigger issues. But the biggest help they got all season long was Iowa losing this past weekend, because the door now remains open for Wisconsin to go to Indianapolis for the Big Ten championship game if they can win their next two. Now, that's a big if. Obviously, Purdue's coming off a big win over Iowa. And then the Badgers would have to beat Iowa a week later. But to think at this point in the season, approaching, you know, the mid part of October, that, you know, the Badgers would be in control of their own destiny in terms of getting to Indianapolis out of the Big Ten West. 2 weeks ago, I would have said that was absolutely crazy. But Iowa's loss opened the door for that. So Graham Mertz, as bad as he's been all season long, and he's been bad, he's really blown some opportunities. I think the biggest one was that first game against Penn State where he just missed a bunch of opportunities that they put the game on his shoulders, and he missed wide open receivers that could have won that game against a really good football team at home out of the gates and kind of set the tone for the season. Obviously, things spiraled in a really negative way against Notre Dame down there at Soldier Field. But he, if he can take care of business and turn things around in the next 2 weeks, the narrative surrounding Graham Mertz is going to be much different on Halloween than it is here on the 18th.
Yeah. All right. And you mentioned it. They do have it all in their own hands, right? Because the three teams that are in front of them with just one loss, they play all three of them still on the schedule. Purdue is the game that's up next. They're on the road against number 25 Purdue. Then Iowa at home. at Rutgers, Northwestern, Nebraska, and they finish at Minnesota, Minnesota being the other one-loss team along with Iowa and Minnesota. So it really is all just right there in their hands. If they can grab it and go, do you give them any chance of taking down Iowa?
Yes, but like I don't feel good about that. I know it's a weird answer. Like Wisconsin always has an upset in them once a year. I don't know if it's there's something about the program. They always seem to have you know, some sort of upset in them. They always have that Ohio State game out of nowhere that comes out. They pull one off. So maybe it's Iowa this year. I don't know. The prevalent thought for me is, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but what's the point? You know what I mean? Like, and the point is to build momentum for the program. The point is to get to Indianapolis and get to the Big Ten championship game and take your chances. But this isn't a college football playoff team. This isn't a team that's going to take down the winner of the other division. This isn't a team that's going to knock off Ohio State this year. They're just not very good. So they can, but they have to go out and prove it. And they haven't proved that they're that good of a football team all season long. So they have a chance, but I don't expect it.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the Green Bay Packers getting yet another win. Man, it seems like a lifetime ago that they dropped that first one so unimpressively, getting housed by the Saints. Now sitting at 5-1. You know, Aaron Rodgers has made a practice of doing this kind of thing. How good is this Packers team? Where do they rank as far as you can see amongst the best of the best in the NFC?
They are good. Obviously, when you have Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones, I don't know if you're going to find a better quarterback, running back, wide receiver trio in the NFL. On top of that, they've been able to go on this five-game win streak with a ton of injuries. Their starting left tackle, David Bakhtiari, has been out all season. He's hoping to come back in the next couple of weeks. He tore his ACL on New Year's Eve last year. They've had to piece together their offensive line all season long. And defensively, they're down their top two corners. They're down their top pass rusher in Za'Darius Smith. So it's been impressive that they've been able to win five games in a row given that amount of injuries. And I think a lot of credit goes to the coaching staff and to Aaron Rodgers. All of that being said, there are two things this Packers team has not done yet. The first of which is outscore an elite offense, and the second of which is slow down an elite offense. They've beaten some teams. They've obviously won five games in a row. They had to eke one out against Cincinnati, who's on the up and up, but I wouldn't call them a Super Bowl contender yet. They went on the road and beat them 25-22 because of a bunch of missed field goals, right? So I think until this Packers team, and they're going to have some chances coming up, at Arizona a week from Thursday, down seeing you guys in KC the following week. They're going to have some opportunities to prove themselves against some real legitimate opponents. If they do that, they will catapult themselves into that elite class. But I need to see this Packers team outscore a Kyler Murray or slow down a Kyler Murray or a Patrick Mahomes in the next 3 weeks here. And at that point, I'll start believing this is a team that can really win the Super Bowl.
How popular is Aaron Rodgers after cameras pick him up telling Bears fans, I own you?
People love him. Oh, people just absolutely love him. It's crazy because he's owned him forever. And he talked all week last week about how he's so proud to have been a part of the turnaround of this rivalry. Because in 1990, this rivalry was lopsided for the Bears. And then Brett Favre took over, and since the start of 1990, the Packers are 45-19 against Chicago. Aaron is now 22-5 in his career against the Bears. So if this is his last moment as a Green Bay Packer at Soldier Field, holy cow, what a way to go out. Now, I don't know what the future is going to hold for Aaron. I think we debated that enough throughout the last offseason, and we'll probably do the same thing in February and March of this upcoming year. But if this is the last time he goes down there and plays a rival on their field and leaves saying, I bleeping own you, I own you, I still own you, Bears fans have to live with that forever. And like, there's no taking that back if he never goes back as a member of the Green Bay Packers. That's the last memory Bears fans are going to have of him in green and gold. And I think that makes people in the state of Wisconsin really happy and comfortable.
Yeah, and they should be. Brian D., great stuff as always, my friend. We really appreciate the time. Have yourself a great week.
You do the same. Thank you.
Chris Domino, 680, The Fan in Atlanta, Georgia, is next. Chris, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Sven. How are you?
Very good, man. I can tell you from talking to you throughout these playoffs, I don't think you felt like you'd be sitting here 2-0 on the Dodgers in the NLCS, did you?
No. And then we get the extra added bonus of Twitter stupidity and then Twitter clapback at stupidity, which leads to a third round of that. It's just an extra bonus. I'm fairly giddy. Now, all of that being said, my sister who lives in Connecticut, on the Boston side of Connecticut, actually during the show this morning had the nerve to send me a text talking about next week. And I said, whoa, we don't do that around here. My boss started to talk to me about next week. I turned my back on him and walked away as quickly and as rudely as somebody can walk away from somebody, because 2-0 is nice, but it ain't four wins yet. So there's still a prevailing feeling of let's talk about it when it actually happens.
Yeah, no doubt. What do you think about the pitching matchup coming up tomorrow, Charlie Morton versus Walker Buehler? This is why Charlie Morton was brought in, right?
Absolutely. I was steadfast on the record when they signed him. I threw all my chips into the middle of the table and said, Charlie Morton will be the most important acquisition in the entirety of the National League. Now, that didn't mean it was going to go well, but I just knew he was going to have an opportunity, or I felt he was going to have an opportunity to do just this. What's really interesting is Max Scherzer goes to the postgame press conference last night and declares he's got a dead arm. And their 37-year-old, who had a closeout, a clincher, couldn't come back and really be at his best. The 37-year-older here, Charlie Morton, gets an extra day or two of rest. So it really is set up where they're using pitchers that I didn't even know they had on the roster. The Braves are lining up with 2-0 leaver Charlie Morton on the mound tomorrow night. On the road, by the way, which is, I think, a better spot for him than it would have been for Ian Anderson.
Yeah, no doubt. It's fun times. The Braves actually, they've made themselves the underdogs, right? The Dodgers have been the team of record of late. And the Braves are kind of now, everyone's kind of rooting for them. The one championship and the 14 division titles now makes them kind of the lovable underdogs that I think the country's rooting for.
It's so funny you say that, because they're also likable in this town. You know, I think we might have talked in the past, the word grinder used to have this negative mentality, but I never thought it did. This is a team that had a fight for it. This is a team that was reinvented, brand new outfield, you know that. And I think it's likable in town. And then you throw in the fact that a guy named Dylan Hernandez and then Bill Plaschke, who writes for the LA Times, decided to go all douche and start telling us what they believe and what they knew and what's racist and a mall, as if we had an Orange Julius and a Chess King somewhere inside the battery here. It's just, it's so classic. Now, again, I'm not claiming victory. I am telling you that I know stupidity when I read it. So it's just added a little bit more fun to the whole idea of being rootable when blowhards actually start to tell you about where you live as opposed to looking in our own backyard. You know, Plaschke, you might want to just do a quick Google search about what Chavez Ravine was built on and that history of that piece of land before he starts talking about how his blood is boiling here in Atlanta when some people are doing a chop with their phone. I mean, I don't care what side of it you fall on, but I do know this. You better be careful talking about things that you should know about in your own backyard.
Interesting. Falcons 2-3 coming off a bye. They won in London. They get Calvin Ridley back, I assume, right, from personal matters?
That is correct. It was duly announced today, and they have a very bad Miami team on the schedule. And my partner actually looked at me today on the air and said, well, we could be talking about, and I knew which direction he was going. I said, we're not doing this on a Monday. We're not. So they're coming off a bye week. Let's just enjoy the fact that they're coming off a bye week and they didn't do anything dumb or lose a football game. We will get to the idea that they're climbing to 3-3 with Miami coming up next at some point this week. I still don't know what kind of football team they are. I know they're not horrendously bad, but I'm also not ready to play. Well, if they get to 3-3, let's talk about what could still happen. I'm just not there yet. It was a great time for a week off, if there is such a thing as this early in the season, having a week off.
Right, but right now 3-3 would give you at least a tie. I'd have to look and see if that would put, does that put Carolina in at 3-3? Carolina, Minnesota, Chicago, all at 3-3, tied for that last playoff spot. I mean, if you get there, you are talking about a Falcons team that is in the playoff mix, right? Like, can they get hot? And because they've got the Panthers, they've got the Saints.
Yeah.
After that, which are teams that are flawed teams like themselves.
Yeah.
I know what we could be talking about. Are they good enough if they take care of business to be there?
That's a great question. I think relative they might be good enough. They still have to prove they're smart enough. So I think we have talked about it. The quickest way to get 2 or 3 wins in an NFL season when you fire a coach is just be smarter. You don't fire coaches just because you're miserable, you know, talent-wise. You fire them because you made some mistakes. You lost some games you could have or should have won. And if they prove they're smarter, then I'll go down the road of, hey, could you be 9-8? Could 10-7 actually get you in? And And I'll do that. But they're still sort of, it's an incomplete as to whether they're going to handle their business well enough at the end of football games or big moments in football games to know that they have a chance to pick up those few wins.
Tell me, Georgia now the undisputed, unanimous number one team in the country, dominated Kentucky. The score not even that close. Kentucky grabbing an by the way, touchdown right before the buzzer, by the way, to get the cover in that game as well. Stetson Bennett, the four, stepping in. I mean, if nothing else, they've certainly got depth of quarterback in a year that there's no Trevor Lawrence, there's no Justin Fields. It doesn't seem like there's that great quarterback that's out there. So, you know, now as we sit here with enough precincts reporting in, they are the team to beat, right?
Yes. Yes. 4 weeks in a row, my challenge has been out there. I'll give you five choices to pick four teams that will be in the college football playoff. And I'm knocking people off left and right because people just say, it's like the mulligan. They want a mulligan. It's like a suicide pool. Can I buy back in as they watch another team lose? So it's been sort of fun that way. I think the big storyline around here was not only the backdoor cover. You know, and I'm telling you, look it up, I'm telling you the truth. It was a 22-play, 75-yard drive. 22 plays. So at the end, people around here were screaming, how dare he call a timeout and score the touchdown? You do that for your own guys. If your guys go on a 21-play drive against the best defense in the country, I'm calling timeout and trying to punch it in too. So I'm not insulted by it. I'm saying that they did what they had to do. At the end of the day, Georgia really looks like the team that, while you can certainly say they don't have the quarterback that everybody thought they were going to have and maybe the quarterback that some people still believe they need, this team is the undisputed halfway through the season champion standing in the middle of the ring. I mean, it's a knockout. It's not a decision. We don't have to go to the scorecards. It's still just now, but they're the best team in college football because their defense dictates that they're the best team in college football.
Are you getting any vibe that the rest of the SEC has backed up the bus as well, that this is the best addition of Georgia plus the Alabama Crimson Tide aren't what they used to be? We know A&M is not a you know, they may be able to fight their way back into the playoffs, but they're no world beater. That it's, you know, it's a bit of a down year for the SEC outside of Georgia in addition to how strong they are?
Yes. I'm not willing to do the ding-dong the witch is dead with Alabama. I don't like the narrative because Alabama's probably going to get their shot. And if it's an undefeated Georgia team, that works out better for Alabama anyway. They're rooting for Georgia more than anybody in the country, probably. I'm not willing to throw, you know, three shovels full of dirt on Alabama. But I do think, again, defense travels in a world where offense has absolutely ruled. Nick Saban so much said last year, defense is not going to win national championships in college football. Georgia might try to prove it. Now, again, I don't want to turn this into the five or seven movies that were the Twilight movies, but I'm Team Stetson. I told everybody, give me a T-shirt. I'll wear it. It'll say Team Stetson on it because I'm more one of those guys who says, I talk about who's playing. You can have the unknown. And by the way, JT Daniels is still an unknown. If you think the end of last year counts for this year, it doesn't. I'll go with the guy that actually is getting me to wins more so than the guy who might be the guy on the sideline.
The Atlanta Hawks coming in a tie for fourth last year. What is your expectation for how where they stack up amongst the Eastern Conference after that great run through the playoffs?
I can't even believe I'm going to say this because everybody does lists and polls. ESPN, I think, had them. The projection over the next 3 years, they project every team's successes over the next 3 years. They have the Atlanta Hawks 11th. If they're 11th best in the next 3 years, this is a total failure around here. Total failure. You know how I felt about Trae Young. I wasn't sure what the buy-in was. I wasn't sure if he could be a leader. I wasn't sure. Then they changed the coach, and all of a sudden I watched this guy doing what he's supposed to do in the postseason. If they're only the 11th best team over the next 3 years with every projection and every ability that they have, plus money at some point, whether they spend it on their own or they go to the outside to get it, that will be an abhorrent failure. So I'm buying in. I'm telling you this, with the nonsense that goes on in Brooklyn, Philadelphia, look at how many problem children there are in terms of organizations, just in the Eastern Conference. I'm not telling you the Hawks are the best team in the Eastern Conference, but there's a stability here. And again, this is funny because their old ownership group used to get called into the commissioner's office, not by one, but by the NHL and the NBA commissioner. And now I'm saying the steadiest ship in the Eastern Conference is easily the Atlanta Hawks right now. Plus, they've got talent. Plus, it looks like they're going to take care of their own on top of that.
Chris Domino in Atlanta. Great stuff, buddy. Have yourself a great week, my friend. We really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Rick.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He
He's been a top NFL insider for 15 years.
We'll see how that's received.
Well, it's interesting, too, because this
Hold
is
on
all...
a second.
Adam's on the phone.
Okay.
We'll talk
about
that. That's how good he is. That's how good he is. I'll tell you what.
He's been honored by Frank Caliendo.
Based on what I've been told, word around the league is many fans struggle understanding what an NFL insider is all about.
He's even been in the movies. He's Adam Schefter of ESPN in the program.
Welcome back here to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some NFL football. Adam Schefter is with us here in the program. Adam, how are you, sir?
Hello, this is Jordan. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I think there's a lot to talk about this weekend. But first, let's maybe we'll call it taking care of some house cleaning. I know you, being a guy who writes the stories, doesn't want to be part of the story, but because of what's going on in the NFL and with the investigation into Washington football team, some of your communications, which I think speaks to how you break so many stories as ESPN senior NFL insider. One of your emails ended up coming out, and, just my two cents, I don't really understand how going out and making sure that you get the information correct is a big deal, but for some people, they made it a big deal. Just your thoughts, I saw the release that was on ESPN, but just, your background on what you were trying to accomplish there and what the situation was.
Well, thanks for asking the question, sir. And I would just say that it was during a time of the collective bargaining agreement. It was a complex subject. Bruce Allen was at the negotiating table, and I sent him an email to make sure that I had everything correct that was in the article. There was a facetious tone in there. Again, there were people that raised questions about it. That's fine. I got it. Again, I have tried to be very thorough and fair and doing my job for 31 years. In no way would I ever allow anybody to dictate to me what is and isn't a news story or have final control over a story. And so in that particular case, I was going through all the fact-checking information, making sure that everything was accurate, and that's what that was about.
Yeah, and it makes sense to me. I mean, to me, the whole purpose, and I get what you're saying. You're saying facetious, like, hey, go ahead and edit it, like joking around as you would with someone that you have a relationship with. Like if I went to my finance guy and said, hey, pay my bills. Well, I don't think he's actually going to pay my bills. But the point is, hey, do well in the market and, hopefully we can retire. I totally get it. So I think it got blown out. I'm just curious on that subject, though, what's next, right? Like, are we ever going to see? I've had some people say, listen, there are some rumors out there that say Dan Snyder's the source of the leaks on John Gruden. He wanted to try to get after Bruce Allen. There's, when do we see something about the football team? Because that investigation and an FBI investigation are going on right now. It seems like everything that has nothing to do with them, which is the whole point of the investigation, is what we're getting information on.
I don't know what's going to come next, to be honest with you. There have been a lot of twists and turns to the whole story. It does seem like a fairly bitter dispute between Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen that has led to a lot of other shrapnel going off. And I guess I would just say that the organization, the Washington Football Team organization, has had a lot of issues over time. A lot. John Gruden sent some offensive emails. I'd like to think that there wouldn't be any more emails like that people use terminology like that, racist, sexist, homophobic terms. And again, I think let's not lose sight of the fact of what this was all about anyway, and an organization that was embarrassing for a long period of time.
And listen, I know you're not one of the owners, right? And not sitting in the meetings, but you're as connected as anybody in the industry. Yeah, a lot of people, I think, thought when this first came out that Donald Sterling and what happened to him with the Clippers and being forced to sell his team is where this would go. What's happened is, while Daniel Snyder is not running the team day to day, I guess his wife has been installed in that position. He has gone to now being the 100% owner of the team, which would seem to be going in the wrong direction. Is the end game on this that Daniel Snyder is going to be forced to sell, or is that just something the NFL will never do?
No. Well, I'm not going to say never, but I can tell as of this moment, the NFL has never considered having Dan Snyder forcing a sale of his franchise. I've never heard that. Maybe they've had that discussion behind closed doors, but it's never been something that's been remotely close, even though I think there have been some people who have felt that way.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. We spent a lot of time talking about it with folks in D.C. this week, obviously with the Chiefs playing there against the football team. So I think interesting. We're talking to Adam Schefter here in the program. Adam, to the game on the field, or maybe let's just do a little more house cleaning. The trade deadline's not far away. We saw Zach Ertz get dealt to the Cardinals. Do you think that this is going to be an active trading season as we're a couple of weeks away from the deadline?
I think people love for it to be active, Seren, but the fact of the matter is that while there may be some names, and it wouldn't be surprising if there were, there aren't a lot of teams that have a lot of cap space to do some of the big deals, right? So, like, if Denver ever decided, oh, you know what, let's trade Von Miller. He's going to be 33 years old in March. His contract expires at this. Like, to me, that would make sense. But who's going to be able to pay him? It was a lot for the Panthers to absorb the contract of Stephon Gilmore. And that was already one big trade that was made. So we've seen that trade go down. And there have been a few little deals. But the NFL has never been known for a lot of trades around the deadline. We saw the Gilmore deal 2 weeks ago. Is it 2 weeks ago? 2 weeks
yeah.
ago. And so I would imagine we'll get a couple more things. That'd be my guess. But, you know, it's not like you're going to see, I don't think, some huge blockbuster deal, you know, with a lot of players involved. It's just not what the NFL does midseason, usually.
If there's one name that maybe could be a blockbuster that's unique, it's Deshaun Watson. Do you get a sense, are you hearing anything that he could be on the move at this deadline?
You know, what I would say there, Seren, is that's been chattered about, talked about, speculated about since this summer. And there have been 5 times where I've gotten calls, hey, you need to stay on this. He's about to get traded. Only find out that, no, he's not. Now, could that change today, tomorrow, next week, before the – yeah. But all I'm saying is that's one of those things that's been out there for a while that just has not materialized. And by the way, if you're the Houston Texans, what is the rush to trade him before the deadline now? Draft picks in 2022 or after the season when you know where all the picks are and you get to fully assess your roster, right? Like there's no rush. I guess maybe you save the money. So that would be one thing, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree with you. Unless you get overwhelmed, right? Somebody'd have to just come in and you're like, well, it really doesn't matter where the picks are. Nobody's going to give us more than this. You know, the teams that have been talked about, Philadelphia, I don't see them being in that position. Jalen Hurts is playing pretty good, right? But Miami, did Tua keep Miami out of the sweepstakes by the way he played? I know they didn't get the win in London, but he played pretty good. Did that keep Miami out of that and maybe, you know, eliminate any potential, you know, somebody who'd come in and pay a big price?
I think you got a situation there where, you know, Miami's always been connected to Deshaun Watson, right? But it seems like they've got a few different issues going on right now. I think the record's 1-5. They've always been the team that made the most sense for Deshaun Watson. Whether something gets done now after the season, we'll just have to see.
Yeah. We're talking right now with Adam Schefter here in the program. Cam Newton, read a story that he's now vaccinated. Is this his effort to attract a team? I thought that like a great scenario to finish out the year would be to sign on with the Kansas City Chiefs as a backup. I think the Chiefs are one of the few teams that could sign him and there would be no pressure on their starter, right? He's so entrenched that you're not going to divide the locker room. Nobody's going to say Cam should be there. And he would actually give them a great guy to you know, for short yardage. And then, of course, a veteran to back him up. Is he of that mindset to try to win a ring? Does anybody know? Or is he looking to jump in and be a starter at some point this year if anyone is going to sign him?
What you're talking about with
Cam.
I think Cam wants work, period. You know, and with the vaccination thing, to me, that's like a message. I haven't gotten work. I want you all to know I'm vaccinated. So if that's an issue, which it probably was, that's not an issue. But nothing's materialized. Now, Pete Carroll said today that they reached out. I don't think that was like, oh, let's go see if we get this. I think he was just kind of speaking. It was not the time heavy. They're looking over their options after Russell Wilson gets hurt. But didn't sound like anything's imminent. So I think Cam's just looking to get back in the league, and there aren't a lot of teams right now that are looking to add a quarterback to the roster.
Would Dallas be interested? Do we think that Dak's calf is going to be okay? Where's their level of concern in Dallas?
Well, he's having MRIs today, and it's a calf injury. And I don't think it's just like, okay, that's nothing. It's on the same foot that he had the ankle injury last year. Maybe not. They're related. They have a bye week, so that's a big plus for Dallas, right? You can almost rest him for 2 weeks and have him play if he's recovered at that point. So, but calves, I think, are a little tricky. We saw that yesterday with Kareem Hunt. Michael Gallup, the Cowboys wide receiver, had a calf injury. Still isn't back yet. Do I think Dak is going to miss time? I haven't heard that he will, but I don't think it's an insignificant injury.
Yeah, right. How about Baker Mayfield and his shoulder? It's not his throwing shoulder, but I don't think it's a good sign when your quarterback's sitting at his post-game press conference in a sling. How worried is Cleveland that he's going to be out? Throw in the fact that both their running backs are now nursing calf injuries. How dire is the situation for the 3-3 Browns?
Well, I think that's the kind of injury that Baker Mayfield's going to have to play with all year long. He'll probably have surgery on after the year. And the more it pops back out, the more damage is being done, probably. And so, it's not a great thing for him. It's not ideal. The Browns are as beat up as anybody right now. If you look at all the players they're missing, wow. I mean, it's a long list of guys right now. And so they're in a tough spot. In a short week this week, playing Denver, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, Case Keenum, the backup there in Cleveland. So just kind of running down the quarterback spots that maybe if somebody wanted to make a move for Deshaun Watson or wanted to sign Cam Newton, the injuries are piling up for a number of different people out there. And how about the Bucs? Richard Sherman now going to be out a couple of weeks. They were down. They had to press him in with almost no practice, and he had a rough go of it, was maybe finally starting to settle in. Now he's going to be out a couple of weeks. How much concern is there in Tampa for how banged up they are in their secondary?
Well, they've had a hard time keeping players healthy, and I think it was probably good for them to get that win, give themselves an extra few days, try to hold it together. You know, here's the thing. They may be missing people there, and it's hurting them on defense, but it almost feels that their offense can outscore anybody anytime. And so they're playing the way that the Chiefs used to. They're not playing that way right now, but that seems to be the way and the level that the Bucs are operating at right now.
What about the statement the Ravens made? The Chargers were kind of God's gift to the NFL, and people were ready to crown them, Baltimore slapping mm-hmm. them down after needing a record-setting. We talked about it coming into this week, and maybe I should take credit for inspiring the Ravens because I said, look, this team's a handful of plays. They needed, what, two missed field goals and a missed extra point to get to overtime against the Colts. They needed a 66-yard field goal to beat the lowly Detroit Lions. They needed a turnover, a forced turnover late in a game where it looked like the Chiefs were driving for the game-winning field goal. This was a team that was just a couple of plays away from being 1-4. I liked Baltimore because it's the NFL. And, on any given Sunday, as soon as you think somebody's great, that's when the league reminds you how balanced it is. But that was one hell of a statement for Baltimore to make in that game, was it not?
Listen, they've lost one game this year. Now, I just think that maybe – their season, they think about how many close games they've won this year. They won against Detroit where Lamar had an unbelievable drive, long pass. Justin Tucker kicked the NFL record field goal. They beat the Colts. Then they dominated the Chargers. But that's just the league. You win a couple of games like that, Duran. You build up momentum. The wins count the same. Shouldn't have beaten Detroit, maybe shouldn't have beaten Indy, but they did. They get by, and now all of a sudden they're sitting there, one loss, and people are talking about them as Super Bowl contenders. So, to me, that just shows you how narrow the line is in this league between average, good, and great. Just a couple plays here or there. It makes the difference in the tone and narrative that's set for every team in the league every week.
And the one team that's bucking that trend is the Arizona Cardinals, who keep on winning And as we mentioned, added Zach Ertz. Look, you can be hot for a time. Like I said, like the Chargers looked like they were God's gift. Now at 4-2, they kind of settle back into the pack. Is it time to say that the Arizona Cardinals, I know record-wise, yes, the answer is they're the best team in the NFC. But I think a lot of people felt like, yeah, okay, I'm going to put them in the mix now with the Packers and the Bucks and the Cowboys. They weren't ready to say Arizona is the best team in the NFC. Are we now there at 6-0?
Well, the NFC is loaded this year. Loaded. You listed all those teams. You didn't mention the Rams either.
Right.
So it's the Bucks, the Rams, the Packers, the Cowboys, the Cardinals. Those are some really good football teams right now. And the NFC playoffs look like they're going to be really interesting this year. To see which of those teams come out.
And apologize. Sorry to interrupt you there, Adam. Is Zach Ertz, is there a feeling that that was the last piece of the puzzle that they were looking for?
Well, you know, they lost Max Williams to a season-ending injury, and that was a big loss. Max Williams is a pretty good player. And then they had a hole at that spot. And so they were looking to plug a hole. Zach Ertz was available. They worked it out, and it worked out well for Arizona. They get a guy. I know Zach Ertz, he likes to get back to the way he played before. Hopefully he can. But they needed another weapon at that spot, and that was a good addition for that team.
Is Chandler Jones, there was talk that he wanted out. Is that gone? I mean, he had a great first game, hasn't really done much since, but is that water under the bridge now?
No. I mean, what it is he's wanted a new contract and hasn't gotten the contract. And because he hasn't got a contract, you know, you're hearing they might want, I don't think he wants out. Like, who wants out of a place that is winning the way they are with a great young quarterback, has a real chance this year? I don't think he wants out. I think he wants to be paid. Who does?
We're talking with Adam Schefter here in the program, our Monday visit with ESPN senior NFL insider. What do we take away? The Chiefs, I know, got a lot of bounce back respect. I know I've seen a number of different sites that are like, oh, are the Chiefs all fixed? Beating football team. Look, I don't think you can say that, right? Like, you're supposed to beat football team. They did it. They did it without playing very well in the first half and still won comfortably. I think that's a good sign, big picture-wise. But where is the feeling maybe amongst the folks in the league that you talk to as to where the Chiefs sit amongst the AFC's best?
They still look off, Sharon. They don't look as potent as they have in other years so far. But it doesn't mean it won't change in the second half of the year. The defense looks vulnerable. The offense looks like it's pressing. Patrick looks like he's trying to do too much. I think that's what it looks like to me. Now, the week-to-week evaluation, right? So we'll see how that plays out. But they definitely have some things to correct and improve upon to get to the level that they would need to be and want to be at to have the type of postseason run that they expect. And they have as much talent as anybody can definitely get there. But there are things that definitely have to be cleaned up and buttoned up before they reach that level again.
They go on the road to Nashville to take on the Titans. The Titans are home tonight. You'll have them on Monday Night Football. Everyone can check it out on ESPN. And, of course, we're the home of the NFL. You catch it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as well. Bills 6-point favorites at the Titans. The Titans, I know, are 3-2, and they carry some name recognition. They've been in the playoffs the last couple of years. But they lost a lot on defense and have been battling a lot of injuries. How good, I mean, and their division doesn't seem to be very good. The Colts don't seem to be willing to get up and get going. How good are the Titans?
3-2 good right now with a lot of question marks.
Right.
Ryan Tannehill is not playing the same way he did. The play action game is not as effective as it was. Derrick Henry's a beast. That guy is just incredible. And I think people recognize finally how good he is. But it's a situation where they've been off too. They've been off too. Now maybe they win tonight, and we say, "Boy, look at this guy, 4-2, sitting there, right?" Like, hey, that's how this league works. You know, that one game fits the narrative for a week, but they just have not looked as effective to date so far.
Time for our Final Four with Adam. Adam Schefter is with us, ESPN senior NFL insider. Our Final Four brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours and a Saturday morning walk-in clinic. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I don't know, are you in studio or are you in Nashville today?
We're in Nashville.
Okay, here we go then. Do you enjoy a spicy Nashville chicken sandwich?
Well, considering the hotel we got to last night had no food at all, I would have enjoyed anything they were doing. So, yes.
Okay, I like it. Right now you're feeling the AFC's number one seed will be who? Just a pulse check, not asking you to nail it, but who do you feel like right now is the favorite to be the one seed in the AFC?
Buffalo.
Okay, so the Bills, we'll see them tonight, what they can do with the Titans. Do you like some country music?
Yeah, every now it's not my first choice, but I have an appreciation of it. Not as much as some people, but yeah, it's fine.
Okay. And finally, the AFC West favorite is right now. Is it still the Chargers at 4-2, or are the odds makers, who are now posting the Chiefs again as a slight favorite to win the division? The Raiders are also 4-2, Broncos at 3-3. Who do you think is the favorite to win the AFC West right now?
I can give you an answer. I think the Chiefs are the best team. Doesn't mean they win the division. I think the Chargers are formidable. You know how I feel about Justin Herbert. And I think the Raiders are going to play inspired under Rich Bisaccia. I think they may get better. So I don't think Denver will win the division. That's the one team I would eliminate.
Okay.
And I don't think that the Raiders probably will keep up with the other two. So the Chargers and Chiefs, I guess I go with the Chiefs, but they're going to have to play better than they have.
No doubt. Adam, always great catching up with you, man. We appreciate the time. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, sir, and have a great week.
The program with Soren Petro.
Humus? What's that?
It's a lemony garbanzo dip.
You have never seen a football in your life.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good citizen of the hour answer. How many times has a team won the first two games of a postseason series in walk-off fashion? 4. Braves really? Over the Dodgers this year. 97 Marlins over Giants, 69 Orioles over Twins, and one that's interesting, the 81 Division Series, Houston against the L.A. Dodgers. Houston won the first two games at home in walk-off fashion. Dodgers won the next three to win the series, but on to win the World Series that year.
Not bad. Good sense.
The Dodgers have hope.
GoodSenseSubs.com. By the way, thanks to Good Sense for my Saturday post-soccer match meal. I had the kids soccer, then grabbing some Good Sense on the way out. It is a great, great way to grab you some lunch. You can get it on the way home, get you some dinner tonight. GoodSenseSubs.com. Our thanks to Adam Schefter. By the way, the guy wanted to get the facts right.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Listen, the optics are not good. It doesn't look good when you're like, hey, edit this. But as he mentioned, tongue-in-cheek was the approach. But isn't getting it right what it's all about? I didn't get it.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Show. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, Gonzaga number one in the AP preseason college basketball poll. Who was the last preseason number one to win the championship? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.